This week, we read an article from Steve Harrison when he asks, what exactly does hold the universe together, and will it be around forever? Then, we'll hear from illustrious Brother Harrison in his all-new Masonic Minute segment, This Week, A Love Story. Then we're going to wrap it all up when we talk about the similarities between Freemasonry and a modern iteration of Raja Yoga. Is there a connection between Freemasonry's search for morality and what yoga teaches? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 474. So many episodes. Well, first things first, please let me go ahead and thank all of the people supporting this show, our contributors, our fellows, our producers, and maybe you're a legacy partner. We have this new tier available through Patreon if interested. But those first three tiers, the contributors, the fellows, and producers, are really the heart and soul of what make this show possible. We've been at it for just about 10 years now, and you guys make it all happen. So if you're interested in figuring out how you can be a part of the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com. There's something new. We have added an additional perk to anybody who is a contributor, a fellow, a producer, a legacy partner of the WCY podcast. So at any of the tiers, I started a Facebook group called Craftsman Plus. Craftsman Plus is this kind of a small exclusive community of supporters of the program who could get together and talk about some of the concepts we talk about in the show, which is why in each episode now I'm asking really two questions. And those questions are then posed later in the Facebook group. Now, to be a part of that Facebook group, of course, you do have to be somebody who has supported the WCY podcast, either being a contributor, a fellow, a producer, a legacy partner. So I want to thank all those people. That Facebook group is up. So if you're listening to the show and you're a supporter of the show, search for Craftsman Plus on Facebook and you'll find it. Now spell it out, P-L-U-S, or you can just write Craftsman Plus and you can check it out. Now, where does that come from? Well, eventually, if you go to WCYpodcast.com, you'll see the shop. I am developing kind of a cool little gift that we'll have eventually is the Craftsman Plus journal and pen. And it'll be a nice little leather journal. And the picture that's up is the journal that we'll likely be getting. The pen will be a little bit different, but we're going to work all that out in the future. But we got to meet some funding goals before we can start offering some stuff like that. So now, as you heard in the top of the show, we've got a lot of great content this week. So I want to go ahead and get right into it. First up, we're getting a double dose of Stephen L. Harrison this week. Not going to apologize for that. Steve wrote this great piece last week, and I just love it. So let's dive into this one and see what he has to say. Heaven and Earth Will Pass Away, by Midnight Freemason contributor, Brother Stephen L. Harrison, 33rd degree, fellow, Missouri Lodge of Research. Quote, geometry, the first and noblest of sciences, is the basis on which the superstructure of Freemasonry is erected. By geometry, we may curiously trace the nature through her various windings to her most concealed recesses. By it, we discover the wisdom, power, and goodness of the grand architect of the universe, and view with delight the proportions which connect this vast machine. By it, we discover how the planets move in their respective orbits, and demonstrate their various revolutions. End quote. We as Freemasons see a close and direct relationship between the functioning of the physical universe and God. After all, we do, in fact, refer to Him as the grand architect of the universe. He created it, constructed it, runs it, and that's all there is to it. In fact, you don't have to be a Freemason to hold that belief. We are so in awe of this creation that we ask, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him? This belief doesn't just come out of thin air. We see so many things around us that tend to confirm there is something intelligent, perhaps divine, that is in control. In the classic double slit experiment, for example, we find electrons that behave one way if someone is watching and differently without an observer. Or any scientist will tell you we know there is a force holding galaxies together. We have no idea about its nature and call it dark matter. If we draw a line in the sand, as some do, and say those paranoid electrons behaving that way indicate a form of divine intelligence, or buy into the common claim dark matter is in fact God holding the universe together, we set ourselves up. There are plenty of examples where those lines have been drawn only to be erased by scientific discoveries. In the 17th century, people saw the heavenly bodies moving around the earth and said, they do that because God put the earth and mankind at the center of everything. Then a couple of guys named Galileo and Copernicus came along and burst that bubble. If we think those electrons and dark matter prove God exists, what will we do when a modern-day Copernicus finds a scientific causation? It's easy to fall into that trap. If we keep doing that, and then back off on our definition and understanding of God with every scientific discovery, we seemingly wind up with what astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson calls an ever-receding God. Maybe it should be the other way around. In other words, if we discover some phenomenon is not caused by a mysterious action of God, does that not also teach us a little more about what God is? The second degree lecture teaches us we should embrace the sciences. As those discoveries come to light, the fact is God isn't receding. With each new discovery, we learn more, not less, about the true nature of God. The spiritual, not the physical, is what's important. Read our ritual carefully. It says by geometry, science, we discover God's wisdom, power, and goodness, not that we use it to discover God himself. Scientists have proven the universe is expanding at an ever-increasing rate. This has led to a theory about its end, which says it will just keep expanding until all stars burn out and the universe will die a dark and cold death. If you're looking for an area where science and religion or spirituality are in agreement, look to Matthew 24:35. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Don't get hung up about the physical universe. Both God and the scientists say it won't be around forever, but God's words, those spiritual lessons, will be. Let's not worry over the fact that God didn't put the earth at the center of the universe, or he may or may not be manifest in a bunch of shy electrons. Let's use his spiritual teachings to learn how to live our lives, improve them, and the lives of others. Now, of course, this one hits home for me because I am forever studying physics as a hobby. I'm a hobby physicist, so I'm not some kind of expert here on the topic, but I really like the way Steve puts this, because so many people miss the point when I talk about some of this stuff. They think, well, you're really just making God so much smaller. Well, you know, the Pope once famously said something along the lines of, if we discover aliens, it doesn't mean God is smaller. It means he's bigger. And let me not just use a pronoun there. It's bigger, whatever it is. So, love the piece from illustrious Brother Harrison. And I think that will be the first question this week. When science figures out, I should say discovers, but it's not discovery. When science figures out how some part of the divine mechanism works, does it make God smaller? Or is it merely us understanding some small part of the equation used in the creation? Is God a mathematician, as Michio Kaku once stated? Now, before we move on to the next piece this week, I did want to run over and let you guys know the presentation schedule. I've got some stuff coming up, and you might be interested in checking it out. On December 21st this year, I'll be doing the Masonic Pub Crawl presentation, and if you want to attend it, you're going to need to contact a certain brother for an invitation. You can find that email address on the website under presentation schedule, wcypodcast.com. Something I'm really excited about is coming up on January 18th. That will be a date where Brother John Ruark and I will be coming together to present for Publicity Lodge number 1000 in New York. It will be their 1025th special communication, and John and I will be doing a joint presentation on It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry, a book that we wrote a little while ago that is always finding a new audience, and there's been some great talk about it. So we're really excited about that. The 27th, about a week later, I'll be doing a presentation, a second part, the Tetragrammaton, the Lost Word, Quantum Part 2 for Brother TJ and his lodge. And then nothing for a couple months yet. I think we still have May 1st, 2021 for Masonicon at Ezekiel Bates, which should be right on schedule. Hopefully these vaccines get out to everybody and we can get back to work and meeting and sharing and fellowship. I do have my fingers crossed. And you know, I wanted to go ahead in this particular episode. A friend of mine, Brother Chris, sent me a message and he said, you know, there's this really big fan of the show and his name is Brother Chad. So, hey Chad, I heard you like the podcast. I'm super stoked that you're into it and I'm really grateful that you listen to the program and that you enjoy it. So, Brother Chad Lovejoy, if you're out there and you're listening to this episode, thank you for all you're doing for the fraternity and thank you for listening to this program. And thanks to Brother Chris for all of the work you're doing within the confines of Masonry and out. Now, I'd like to go ahead and transition and get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison.
He was the first Chief Justice of the Ohio State Supreme Court, a United States Senator, the fourth Governor of Ohio, the fifth United States Postmaster General, and he was a member of American Union Lodge 1 in Ohio. Born in 1774, his unusual name was Return Jonathan Miggs Jr. In addition to serving in each of these important positions, Brother Miggs was a brevet colonel in the United States Army. Future President William Henry Harrison considered him to be so distinguished, he named Fort Meigs in Ohio in his honor during the War of 1812, and Meigs County in Ohio is also named for him. Yet the very mention of him begs the question, where did Brother Return get such a unique first name? The first step in the long journey to solve that mystery is an easy one. He was named after his father, Return Jonathan Miggs Sr. The senior Return Miggs was born in 1740 and served as a colonel in the army during the American Revolution. In May 1777, he led what is now known as the Miggs Raid and, greatly outnumbered, defeated the British in a sea battle. In 1779, he put down a mutiny of army troops and received a written thanks from General George Washington. Like his son, he was a member of American Union Lodge 1 in Ohio and served as worshipful master in 1801. Later, he became an Indian agent in Tennessee, where Miggs County and Miggs Mountain are named for him. And, like his son, the mention of him begs the question, where did Brother Return Sr. get such a unique first name? Well, like his son, Return Sr. got his name from his father, Lieutenant Return Miggs, who was born in Guilford, Connecticut in 1707. He died in 1782 at the age of 75, and other than the fact he served in the military, not much is known about him. It is unlikely he was a Freemason. Lieutenant Return Miggs was the fifth child of Jonna and Hannah Willard Miggs. Hannah was a Puritan who refused to marry Jonna on many occasions. Jonna gave it one final try, and upon being refused again, gave up, mounted his horse, and rode off. At that, Hannah, realizing she was losing him forever, called out, "Return, Janna, return." Janna did return, and the couple was married May 16, 1698. Janna said when Hannah cried out to him, "Return," it was the sweetest word he had ever heard, and named his son Return in honor of it. And his son, Lieutenant Return, named his son Return Jonathan, who named his son Return Jonathan Jr., and the family has continued to pass the name down through more generations ever since. Return Jonathan Miggs. It's a love story. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, now this may be the first time in 470-odd episodes we've ever had a love story. What an incredible tale. You know, I'm very much into genealogy and where names come from. In fact, I went into my genealogy family tree to pick out names for my sons and their middle names. It was very much kind of a thing of honor to do. What a romantic and interesting story. If you're into this and anything else that you've heard in the Masonic Minutes, I really have to urge you to go to WCYpodcast.com, not for me, but click on the bookstore and take a look at the various books by those who've been on the show. If you click through these links, they are Amazon links, and there is an affiliate thing that WCY does. We get a couple pennies if you buy a book from the website. But the benefit is that all of the books there are by Steve Harrison are available right there. You can take a look at them. One of the books that I highly recommend, outside of my favorite, which is Freemasons at Oak Island, is Tales from the Craft, the runner-up to my favorite. Of course, when I read Tales from the Craft, I read it in Steve's voice, and you will too. I guarantee it. So head on over there, check out Freemasons Tales from the Craft or any of the other books. And if you're into Masonic history, you cannot go wrong with picking up either the Masonic Memoranda of Frederick Billen or the Ray V. Denslow's Masonic Journey Volume 1 and 2 on Kindle. Alternatively, you can get hardcover editions from molar.org. That's the Missouri Lodge of Research. Now, last week when I was looking for a great article to read for you, I came across one that I thought, well, this is really good, but the episode is getting kind of long already. So I said, well, let me save it for next week because I'm really into the practice of meditation and I'm also very into the idea of yoga. And I'm not a practitioner of yoga. I realize it's a very spiritual and religious thing. And as a Westerner, I likely will never really understand at this stage of my life all that yoga entails. But I really enjoyed reading this article and I wanted to read it for you because maybe this is right up your alley too. And it's called, Is Freemasonry a Modern Iteration of Raja Yoga or Raja Yoga? Again, the same author as last week, Elaine Polonius Fellin. She published this one in September of 2020. And I want to urge you to go on over to philosophicalsociety.org. This is the home of the Masonic Philosophical Society, and they write some really great research papers over there, really great blog posts that I think is the right way to attack practical masonry today. So here we go. Is Freemasonry a modern iteration of Raja Yoga? Quote, when the soul sees itself as a center surrounded by its circumference, when the sun knows that it is a sun surrounded by its whirling planets, then is it ready for the wisdom and power of the masters? End quote. William Walker Atkinson. Although few are aware of the fact, the traditional practice of yoga as hailing from the ancient Hindu tradition is not meant to be a merely physical endeavor. It is not a series of stretches and breathing exercises meant only for the body, but should encompass all levels of mankind's being, including physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. Similar to Freemasonry, the royal path of Raja Yoga is also built on the principle of morality, instructs individuals to quote-unquote know thyself, and works to unite man with his creator. could Freemasonry be a modern version of the ancient Raja Yoga tradition? The Paths and Wheel of Yoga. The word yoga means union and describes a way to connect, yoke, or unite with our real nature, true self, or divine essence. This inner self is known by the Sanskrit word Atman, the first principle, the true self of an individual beyond identification with phenomena, the essence of an individual. Since time immemorial, numerous paths of yoga have been developed, each particular to a different temperament of humanity. There is a lack of consensus as to the exact number and classification of true paths of yoga, but all are founded upon the principles of moral rectitude and self-improvement through discipline. Yoga paths practiced around the modern world include Raja Yoga, the Royal Yoga, Jnana Yoga, the Yoga of Knowledge, Bhakti Yoga, the Yoga of Devotion, Karma Yoga, the Yoga of Action, and Kriya Yoga, the Yoga of Technique, combination of Hatha, Tantra, and Mantra Yoga. In addition, each path shares the same ultimate goal, which can be found on the center. It is a journey toward enlightenment, samadhi, and liberation, moksha. Thus viewed collectively, the different paths form a conceptual superstructure known as the Wheel of Yoga. As one school of yoga describes, quote, "Imagine in the mind a bicycle wheel. The tire that forms the outer part of the wheel is symbolic of the yamas and the niyamas, the ethical and moral principles of living. These are the basis of all of the paths of yoga. The very center of the wheel is samadhi, or enlightenment. This is the end goal, which all of the paths are leading. The various paths of yoga are symbolized in the spokes that lead from the outer tire to the inner hub." End quote. The Path of Initiation. As an initiatic science and method of instruction, Raja Yoga utilizes a degree system and techniques such as meditation, discipline, and directed concentration. Both Raja Yoga and Freemasonry are esoteric in their nature, encouraging members to go within the search for answers, rather than relying on knowledge from exterior sources in the search for truth. Esotericism is based on the metaphysical conceptualization of the transcendent unity of all major religious traditions practiced throughout human history, and provides a point of unity, a center from which one cannot err, encompassed by all exoteric religions, faiths, and philosophies. Recognized as one of the most influential comparative religion scholars of the modern era, Fridtjof Schoen provided this further insight. Quote, "Our starting point is the acknowledgement of the fact that there are diverse religions which exclude each other. This could mean that one religion is right and that all others are false. It could mean also that all are false. In reality, it means that all are right, not in their dogmatic exclusivism, but in their unanimous inner signification, which coincides with pure metaphysics, or in other terms, with the Philosophia Perennis." End quote. Freemasonry's teachings share a belief in the universality of the world's religions, described by Schoen as a Philosophia Perennis, or perennial philosophy. This philosophy asserts that all religious traditions share, quote-unquote, a single metaphysical truth or origin from which all esoteric and exoteric knowledge and doctrines has grown. Do Freemasonry and Raja Yoga share the same origin or metaphysical truth? Do they share similarities in philosophy and tradition that may provide additional insight for the Freemason in search of more light, or the seeker traveling toward the door of the temple? That is for each reader to determine, and please share your thoughts in the comments section. A series of lessons on Raja Yoga. What follows is an excerpt from the book Raja Yoga, written by William Walker Atkinson, assumed author or co-author of the great work The Kybalion, under the pseudonym of Yogi Ramacharaka. The complete version of the book can be found here, and they provide a link. Quote, "In India, the candidates for initiation into the science of Raja Yoga, when they apply to the yogi masters for instruction, are given a series of lessons designed to enlighten them regarding the nature of the real self, and to instruct them in the secret knowledge whereby they may develop the consciousness and realization of the real I within them. They are shown how they may cast aside the erroneous or imperfect knowledge regarding their real identity. Until a candidate masters this instruction, or at least until the truth becomes fixed in his consciousness, further instruction is denied him. For it is held that until he has awakened to a consciousness realization of his actual identity, he is not able to understand the source of his power, and moreover is not able to feel within him the power of the will, which power underlies the entire teachings of Raja Yoga. The yogi masters are not satisfied if the candidate forms merely a clear intellectual conception of this actual identity. But they insist that if he must feel the truth of the same, must become aware of the real self, must enter into a consciousness in which the realization becomes a part of his everyday self, in which the realization consciousness becomes the prevailing idea in his mind, around which his entire thoughts and actions revolve. To some candidates, this realization comes like a lightning flash the moment the attention is directed toward it, while in other cases, the candidates find it necessary to follow a rigorous course of training before they acquire the realization in consciousness. End quote. The first two degrees. The yogi masters teach that there are two degrees of this awakening consciousness of the real self. First degree, consciousness of the I. The first, which they call the consciousness of the I, is the full consciousness of real existence that comes to the candidate, and which causes him to know that he is a real entity having a life not depending upon the body. Life that will go on in spite of the destruction of the body. Real life, in fact. Second degree, consciousness of the I am. The second degree, which they call the consciousness of the I am, is the consciousness of one's identity with the universal life and his relationship to and in touchness with all life, expressed and unexpressed. These two degrees of consciousness come in time to all who seek the path. To some, it comes suddenly. To others, it dawns gradually. To many, it comes assisted by the experiences and practical work of Raja Yoga. Lessons required before initiation. Lesson 1. Existence of a Supreme Intelligence. The first lesson of the yogi masters to the candidates leading up to the first degree above mentioned is as follows: that the supreme intelligence of the universe, the absolute, has manifested the being that we call man, the highest manifestation of the planet. Lesson 2. Infinite manifestations of the absolute. The absolute has manifested an infinitude of forms of life in the universe, including distant worlds, suns, planets, etc. Many of these forms being unknown to us on this planet, and being impossible of conception by the mind of the ordinary man. When he has accomplished this, then he may and should go forth to gain outer knowledge as a master demanding its secrets, rather than a slave begging for the crumbs from the table of knowledge. Prerequisite knowledge for candidate. 1. Knowledge of the self. The first knowledge of the candidate is the knowledge of the self. Man, the highest manifestation of the absolute, as far as this planet is concerned, is a wonderfully organized being, although the average man understands but little of his real nature. He comprises within his physical, mental, and spiritual makeup both the highest and lowest, as we have shown in our previous lessons, and in addition to the mental faculties common to all men, or rather, that are in evidence in a greater or lesser degree among all men, there are still higher faculties latent within man, which, when manifested and expressed, render man more than ordinary man. The unfoldment of these latent faculties is possible to all who have reached the proper stage of development, and the desire and hunger of the student for this instruction is caused by the pressure of these unfolding latent faculties, crying to be born into consciousness. Then there is that wonderful thing, the will, which is but faintly understood by these ignorant of the yogi philosophy, the power of the ego, its birthright from the absolute. 2. Acknowledgement of identity as a divine spark. That which is real self of man is the divine spark sent from the sacred flame. It is the child of the divine parent. It is immortal, eternal, indestructible, invincible. It possesses within itself power, wisdom, reality. But like the infant that contains within itself the man, the mind of man is unaware of its latent and potential qualities, and does not know itself. As it awakens and unfolds into the knowledge of its real nature, it manifests its qualities and realizes what the Absolute has given it. When the real self begins to awaken, it sets aside from itself those things which are but appendages to it, but which it, in its half-waking state, had regarded as itself. Setting aside first this and then that, it finally discards all of the not I, leaving the real self free and delivered from its bondage to its appendages. Then it returns to the discarded appendages and makes use of them. Excerpts from Chapter 1, Raja Yoga. So there you have this really interesting article about how Freemasonry and Raja Yoga might be connected in this kind of morality scheme. Are they two different paths leading yet to another central area of enlightenment? I've often thought about this very heavily, in fact. I wrote a whole research paper for the Kansas Lodge of Research on the similarities between Freemasonry and the Bhagavad Gita. So inherently Indian beliefs from the Bhagavad Gita and their relation to Freemasonry. And in it, I do make mention of some of these ideas of the paths of the wheel of yoga. I think all religions tend to somehow allude to this core secret doctrine that we can't exactly express in words, which is why, you know, Freemasonry works so well, because you can read all about it, but until you actually go through the experience, the key word there, experience, you're just not going to grasp it. So our second question for this week, I wanted to relate to this article, is not such a deep question. Maybe the first question was our deep question. This question is a little bit more superficial. And maybe it's not superficial either, but easier to answer. In the particular belief system that you practice, do you think, one, aligns to Freemasonry at a deep level? And two, do you think what your personal philosophy or religion teaches as its absolute core secret teaching, or maybe it's not secret, do you think that aligns to the same thing that maybe Freemasonry has at its core, either exoterically or esoterically? I look forward to reading your answers in the Craftsman Plus Facebook group. If you're not there, leave your answers in the comments section on YouTube or write in the comments where we post the show on Facebook or anywhere else. Really looking forward to reading some of your answers. I want to also give a quick shout out to Brother Tim, who's always like the first to comment on YouTube. Love you, man. Really appreciate the love you give the show and always being the first guy to comment on the program. Again, if you're out there and you're a supporter of this show, I have likely tried to find you on Facebook to add you. But if you're a supporter and you're not in the group, just search for it and I will get the request and I'll approve as soon as I see your name. I want to thank everybody for listening once more to the program. Thank you to our contributors, fellows, and producers. You guys make it all possible. Thank you to all of the YouTube subscribers, everybody out there who's liking the show on YouTube, little thumbs up, recommending it, sharing it with your friends, subscribing, definitely, getting your notifications, definitely. The whole gamut. There's a lot of jokes about out there about, you know, smash that subscribe button, but it does help all of the creators on YouTube so that more people find these videos on Freemasonry instead of the conspiracy stuff. So the more you rate it, the better it populates toward the top, right? Bubbles up. Effervescent push. Also, thanks to anybody who's left us a review on iTunes. Yeah, you love the show? Awesome. Let us know. If you hate the show, totally let me know, you know, leave a rating on iTunes and I'll see those and they all help us make the show better. So feedback, always welcome. If you want to write me for any reason, hit me up at wcypodcast@gmail.com or you can just email admin@wcypodcast.com also. That's it for this week. I hope you enjoy. Hope to see you online. Stay healthy, stay safe, and we'll talk to you all next week. We'll talk to you all then. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.